Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for probably the next 2 hours. But if you'd like to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. First of all, to all you mothers out there, happy Mother's Day a day early. I hope that you have a wonderful day surrounded by your family, your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids, all that kind of stuff. And so I wish you the best, and I wish you all the happiness in the world. And hopefully you'll have a day that you and your family will remember, and that's a good thing. So today we're talking about cars, and you're welcome to call in and ask a car question. You can say, what do you think of the new VW Bugs? These are questions I've had this last week. What do you think about the new VW Bug? My motorhome won't start and the key won't go all the way in. I had somebody take the tank out of my Dodge van. They fixed a hole in it. They put it back in. I think they didn't put in what I needed. I think they put in a smaller tank and now it's leaking again. What do you think I can, what are my options? That kind of stuff. But if you have a car question, we start with year, make, and model, and miles, and then we talk about symptoms, and that's kind of a give and take. When it doesn't start, is it cold or hot? You answer. Does it always do it? No. Will it go days and be fine, and then go days and intermittently not crank over? Yes. That's the kind of give and take that we have. I'm only as good as the information you give me. So if you call in and you tell me what all the guys in Google said, all the YouTube said, what your neighbor said, what the voodoo doll and the guy that has a crystal ball say, it doesn't really move us forward because oftentimes I don't even have the symptoms. So I can't really chime in and agree with one of those guys if I don't really know what they knew. So it's kind of symptom-driven, 602-508-0960. And it's no secret that the women are much better at this calling in than the guys are for that reason. They just kind of will stick to the symptoms. You have all kinds of issues. You have oil leaks and you have bad motor mounts and you have a hesitation and the car won't do 60 but it'll do 55 and the car pulls to the right. And I ask questions like, all the time? On city streets? On highways? Flat highway, because that makes a difference. That's what it's all about. It's just a matter of talking. Now, this is really nothing more than front counter, a discussion. So the customer comes in. Most staff at most garages are trained to, hi, how can I help you? Have you been in before? Oh, let me make a customer file for you. Tell me what you got, what year, make, and model, how many miles it's got on. Then tell me what's going on with the car right now. Now, that's difficult sometimes if the problem is intermittent. That's really difficult for us because we can't possibly take the time to go drive this car every morning or every afternoon at 3 o'clock and that not be billable time. So sometimes when you have an intermittent problem, you have two choices. Start guessing with your money based on our guess, and I say our, that's the auto repair industry, or wait till it gets worse and easier to find. It's not uncommon to have a car that cranks over but doesn't start. The engine doesn't run. And then it only does it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It acts up. The 2 o'clock in the afternoon doesn't really bother us. We're not going to chase the 2 o'clock in the afternoon thing. What we're going to look at, if it cranks over, but it doesn't catch and the motor doesn't start, then typically it's fuel or spark. So now we kind of have to figure out which one that is, and if you'll help us, you'll save anywhere from $100 to $200 an hour if you'll participate in the testing. It's not uncommon for us to give our customers an old spark plug and say, let us demonstrate this because this will help us. You crank it and it goes, but it doesn't start. It's 2 o'clock. Open the hood. I've got this wire sitting here, and I've already greased it up so it comes off really easy. Put the spark plug I gave you. Set it right here. Now you watch when I crank over. And I crank over, and you hear snap, snap, snap. And they go, oh, I can see it. Well, I can hear it from the steering wheel. So you'll be able to hear it too, unless you're on I-10. So that's what I need to know, because if in fact it's got spark, then it has to be fuel. Because those are the only two things. And it runs on Wednesday. Yes, it does. Well, it's not the motor. It's not the ignition. It's based on what we got here. We got spark, but no fuel. A lot of times you'll be missing both because the signal generator is tied to both. So then we have to say, okay, well, the fuel system, if it runs good and runs fine, the fuel system and the ignition are good, but it doesn't start and run here, and we don't have spark or fuel delivery. Sometimes we'll give you a can of carb spray, and we'll set up a hose for you. So if you crank it over and it doesn't start, we want you to take this carburetor can, and we want you to stick the straw in this hose, and we want you to spray it for 10 seconds, and put a rag over the top of it, 10 seconds. And then take your rag off and go back in the car and see if it'll start. And if it starts and runs for a minute and then dies, you just saved yourself a lot of diagnosis, because it's the fuel system. So the fuel pump's in the tank. It goes through the filter. The fuel goes through a filter. Then it goes to the engine. And then what the engine doesn't use is sent back to the pump and the tank. So because of that, if you say, after a long time of cranking, it'll finally start. Well, we're going to look at the fuel pump and the fuel pressure. It's easier. It's not the fuel pump, the fuel filter and the fuel pressure. It's real easy for us to just attach equipment to that and go, oh, well, you need 40 pounds of pressure and you only have 18. Cycle the key one more time, off and then on. Oh, it's dropping. It's 16. Cycle the key on one more time. This is a conversation that saves you money. I'm not trying to get you to diagnose your own car. I'm trying to get you to understand that if you participate in those intermittent problems, it'll save you a lot of money. It's not uncommon for one of my staff to have someone come in, and most of the time it's women, and they come in and they have a wonderful description of the car. Now, that in a car there's pattern failures. So we have this Chevrolet truck between 1992 and 1998. When you had this problem, we knew what it was to fix. But we don't have that much anymore because the cars are so sophisticated. So we see pattern failures, and we know what's going on. If you've got an EcoDiesel from Dodge and all of a sudden you got a bunch of drivability problems, we already know that the EGR cooler's bad. So those are the kinds of things we have. Gil, who have you got?
We have Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Remember last week that guy called from Queen Creek and he had that Dodge that was throwing codes?
Yes.
And another shop told him he needed a new turbo for $8,000?
Yeah.
And he was going to bring it in?
Yeah.
Did he bring it into your shop?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But I'll tell you what, on one of the breaks I'll call my son and ask him. So I don't know.
I was just wondering what was really wrong.
Well,
it sounded kind of fishy. Because he said he didn't have any drivability issues, and he was throwing codes, and they wanted to sell him a new turbo right off the bat.
Well, I did talk to Alan, and folks, my son owns a diesel performance diesel repair shop. And I did talk to him, and I told him, and I actually played the tape for him. And I said, what do you think? And he said the same thing you did, and I already thought that too. All three of us said the same thing. I asked him specifically, how's it the power and the performance? And he goes, fine. And so I knew the turbo, because folks, the turbocharger adds a significant amount of performance to your engine. So if you drive without a turbo, it's going to be tough to get 60 miles an hour, and you're never going to pull a trailer behind that truck. But on the other hand, if you throttle up and that thing takes off like its tailgate's on fire, then the turbo's fine. So that's why I asked those questions, and he said it runs fine, but they told him he needed a turbo. I think, Bob, you'll agree that my advice was go get a second opinion was a good idea.
Right.
Because you can, here's the bad. You put that turbo in and it's an $8,000 bill and it doesn't fix the car. Then what does the shop do? And then they may subcontract that car to another shop, and the shop says, oh, you've got a bad connection right here at this harness at the injector rail. So they fixed that harness, and that would have been a $200 or $300 find it and fix it. But they don't say anything about that. They charge you $8,000. And they fixed it, but you also bought a new turbo you didn't need. So those are the kinds of things. Now, I can tell you 90% of the shops that I know of play by the rules. 90% of my friends that have shops that I respect play by the rules. if a technician misdiagnoses it and puts an 8 grand turbo on it and it doesn't run any better, the turbo's coming off. Or the turbo stays on because the labor to take it off exceeds the value of the turbo. So just leave it on there. So we have to cut our losses as we go along. But, Bob, I don't have any idea. But I'll call Alan and see if he did take it in. And we'll go from there.
Right. Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Thank you, Bob. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem. Oh, and we've got one. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Dave.
Dave, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I have a 1994 Chevrolet Silverado half-ton pickup who just recently has started to have idling problems.
Okay.
And the symptom is that it surges. It's like the idle speed will be up and down, up and down. But sometimes it'll start up and run fine, and later that'll start happening. And then other times it starts up from the get-go when I turn the car on. So
okay.
Just wondering what you might think was going on there.
Okay, so what I hear you saying is that the temperature of the car, whether it's hot or cold, really doesn't make any difference because sometimes it's there cold and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's there hot, sometimes it isn't, right?
Correct.
Okay, good. See how we're making progress. Has anybody been underneath the hood twisting screws? Your son or your wife?
No. The truck is solely mine, and if anybody's been in there, I have, and I hadn't had the hood up on that thing probably for 6 months just because, it's about my oil change interval. And so when this started happening, of course, I popped the hood and just kind of looked around the accelerator cable and just to see what was going on and see if that was moving at all. But beyond that, no.
Okay.
It's been pretty solitary.
Okay. I think, how many miles are on your pickup?
It's about 170,000.
Okay. 170K. There is lots that can go wrong in and around the throttle body. The idle air control motor can go crazy on us or get dirty and carboned up. It's easy to determine which one it is with the proper equipment, the scan tools. So we see the idle air control motor go to 20, and we know that that's kind of a high idle. And then all of a sudden it drops to 8, and then it goes to 10, and for no reason, and there's no command from the computer to do that. So we go, okay, well, we need to look at the idle air control motor. We have to synchronize three things. We have to synchronize the RPM. We have to synchronize what we call base idle, and then we have to synchronize the operation of the idle air control motor. And that's why I ask you if anybody was turning screws. Always, the guy gets in there and he looks at he finds the idle screw and he starts twisting it. Once you do that, you're done because you've taken the synchronization out of it. I'm thinking that the diagnosis on this one, I got to cover all the shops in town. So I take my number and split it. So I'm saying 75, 80 on the low side, maybe 110 on the high side. And I think it's possible, not probable, but possible that you go in and you do a little cleaning here and do a little cleaning there and you balance everything out. Boom, it's done. So that's kind of one of those deals where it's 110 to find it and fix it. Don't count on that. It could also be a vacuum leak. It also could be something wrong where we have a base gas on the idle air control, or on the throttle body that's bad and sucking air. Because if we get unmetered air to the motor, the computer doesn't know what to do. And so when that happens, the computer kind of hunts around looking for some parameters. But you gave me some good symptoms, but I think that the problem's going to be underneath the air cleaner in the bottom line. Okay?
Okay. One more quick question.
Okay.
I have an access point port, where you plug those meters into under the dash.
Yes.
But I understand it's an old version, not as sophisticated as today's newer cars. So am I going to be able to take this somewhere and have them plug into that port, and it'll still read out the things that you say are important that we know what's going on with?
Yours will work fine for a 94. But the newer ones are backward compatible, and sometimes they're not. So it's not uncommon for me to have a scanner that covers from 1998 north, and then I've got a scanner that will go back to 1981 and north. So it's, okay, they're backward compatible. Don't worry about that. We're going to look at the codes. We're going to look at idle air control motor speed. We're going to know the counts on it. We're going to look for a vacuum leak, that kind of stuff. Okay? Good luck to you. Thank you, Dave. 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. You're more than welcome to call us, 602-508-0960, but we're going straight to the callers because we got them. Bernie, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I've got a 1999 Jeep Grand Cherokee, all-wheel drive. A few months ago, I started getting a little pulsation when I came gently to a stoplight on the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And but lately, it's been scaring me when I come flying off the freeway, and if I have to apply those brakes quite hard, the whole front end starts to wobble.
Okay. Okay. There's one of two things. You've got a warped rotor, and the rotor doesn't run true. It looks like a record on a record player that the record's been, the old record player, has been in the sun. And so if he shakes the steering wheel, bingo, we know the problem's in the front end, not the back end, because the back end would shake your butt. So this isn't that bad and that tough to find. God knows what the repair is going to be. Now, it could also be anything that causes play in the front end. So it could be a wheel bearing. It could very well be that there's some suspension or one steering component, like a center link that's out of it, and it allows the wheels. Picture the two front wheels parallel to one another, but they're going left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And that will cause a wobble as well. So the thing to do is take it to your shop and say to them, I want to demonstrate the problem to one of your technicians, please. I'm willing to wait a few minutes till you gather one up and get him all cleaned up, but I would really like the opportunity to show him the symptom so that we can get to that point as cheap as possible.
Okay. I did look at my my wheel bearings have about 109,000 miles on them. Is that a possibility that are worn out already?
No, we're not going to do guessing here, but I'll tell you how to check out your front end. You put your wife in the car, and you start the thing up, and you hit the brakes, or she, you know, you put the parking brake on. So you get over to a position underneath or in front of the car where you can watch both front tires. You tell her to put her hands at 12 o'clock, and she goes right about 3 inches, then she goes neutral, and then she goes left 3 inches and goes to neutral. She's barely steering the steering wheel back and forth. You better see those two front tires moving complete synchronization. Complete.
Uh-huh.
If one is lagging than the other, then you got a ball joint or tie rod end, a control arm. You got a pitman arm that's bad. Something's allowing the wheels to swing left, right, left, right, left, right, and that's your vibration. So,
that's
really
fun.
And truly, the diagnosis on this is pretty simple. I would be surprised if anybody charged you. Well, I would think most everybody's between $45 and $65 to go figure it out.
Excellent. Thank
okay.
you, Mark.
You betcha. David 1, and I got David 2, but David 1's first. David 1, how can I help you?
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I had a question on my old classic Chevy.
Okay.
I got a response back from Daniel.
Uh-huh.
And what I was looking for, I don't know if I understood what he was saying. I have a steering column issue that I need repaired, and he said that your shop does column repairs, but I don't know if he mentioned or if there isn't even a shop in town anymore that repairs steering columns for old cars.
We repair steering columns for old cars. So
okay.
I don't know what your symptoms were. But, yeah, and no, there is other places. The body shops will oftentimes call someone to come in and do a steering column repair. But let me give you an example. The new cars have a steering column complexity on a 1 to 10 scale of 12. and the old cars that you're talking about, you didn't tell me the year, but old Chevy, those are a 1.5 or a 2. Now, for a young buck, it may be a little bit more difficult, but we've put together steering columns from cars in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. I'm not bragging. I'm telling you, we can do it. There's other shops that can do it, too. So he's unable to give you an estimate based on a phone call. The car has to be in front of us, We have to diagnose what it is, and then we give you an estimate. So there's a process that I insist we follow because it's less hassle for everybody associated with it. What year is your Chevy?
2 minutes.
It's a 77 with a tilt column.
What's the problem? Quickly. I don't want to know.
When you turn the ignition to start, it turns real fast. It's like something is broke. And there's like a rod that you can kind of start it.
Okay, stop. The ignition switch rotates a rod. The rod goes down the top of the column to the ignition switch that's really at the top of the column down by the firewall. So if you've got a problem there, it could be that the ignition switch at the bottom of the column at the top has the nuts that adjusted are loose. So, but that is a wild guess on my part, but you're not talking about a steering column repair. You're likely not talking about a steering column repair, but I got to run. David, too, please stick with me, and I will get to you first. 602-508-0960 for the rest of you. 602-508-0960. We have four lines open, and Bob, you called and said, did the diesel guy that needed an $8,000 turbo from last week come into my shop? And the answer is no. He didn't come in. So, you know, I'm not the soothsayer of everything. I'm not the guy that can fix everything that nobody else can. There's lots of good shops. But south of the 60, from way east to Ahwatukee, I am covering that area. And he didn't come in, so perhaps he found another diesel shop, and that's fine with me. We can't possibly fix every car in the world. And right now we're booked a day in advance. Unless the car's towed in, and we'll do our best to kind of figure out what it is so that we can get the estimate and get the parts going. But nevertheless, if you want to go to marksalem.com, you can see my list of best shops throughout the state or throughout Phoenix area. Paint and body, mechanical, diesel, all that kind of stuff. Mark at marksalem.com. After the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to David just like I promised we would. David, how can I help you?
Well, you are a soothsayer, I'll have to say. So this is David, the one that called you last week about the diesel.
Okay.
And my son-in-law's truck. He had the same kind of a problem with an F-250 several years ago, and it cost him $10,000 for a turbo. And so he was just nervous. Okay. And so they went to look, and they're just going to trade it in. You know, they just wanted to get rid of it. But nobody would give him a decent price for this truck. So I talked him off the ledge and just told him to just, when I'm out of town next week, take my truck and take your truck into you guys and have it diagnosed for real. So that's what happened.
Okay.
And next week or the week after, we'll have a diagnosis.
Okay, and I already talked to Alan about it, and I said,
yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something. I said, hey, son, got a minute? He goes, yeah. I said, talk to a caller, and he's got this Ford, and he's got an $8,000. He's staring at an $8,000 turbo. And he goes, how does it run? That's the first question out of his mouth. And I said, I asked him that question, bud, and he said it ran fine. And he goes, well, then it's not the turbo. And I said, that's what I told him. But I learn a lot from you, my son. And so we're waiting on it, and it'll take a few minutes to figure out what it is. But I want to tell you something. We work on the Ford diesels. I mean to tell you, there isn't a shop that does diesel that doesn't work on the Ford diesels, except the 6.7, which is the newer model one. But the 6-liter and the 6.4, the 6-liter, we made a lot of money. The 6.4 is kind of a middle, and the 6.7 is a fine, fine motor, and it hurts me to say that about the Ford. But anyway, thank you very much, David. Number two, thank you very much. Let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. In Mesa, there's lots of repair shops, but they have to apply to be on Mark's Best Car Repair Shop list. And Thompson's has, and some of the others that have applied simply just weren't able to meet the standards that I insist. So Thompson's is on Main Street, just east of Stapley, been around a long time, since 1970, and you only have to meet Brian or Thelma, husband and wife, to know why I like them so much. Plus, they both come from families, the Vivian family and the Thompson family, both of them. their history is gas stations back to the late 50s, early 60s. So they've been around the smell of gas a long time, and they're really a good shop. Who we got next, or do we have anybody?
Lines are open.
Lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You got a 1 in 5 chance of getting in. I'll tell you about another another shop that's in Phoenix that's a transmission shop that I refer people to, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. Phil's been around since 1968. He knows the old ones and the new ones. And the fundamentals haven't changed. It's the old ones did something mechanical, and the new ones do it electronically with solenoids. So that's the difference. They really have a kind of thing, but you have to know what you're doing, and you have to have the fundamental knowledge before you can fix the solenoid and the commands and the grounds and the power. So if you're looking for a transmission shop, Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix, again, 40th Street on the north side of 40th and Washington on the north side of the street, is a great place to be. It's important to know that all the shops on my website, marksalem.com, have been vetted. And I'll tell you what I promise you. It's in writing. It says that if you go to one of my best shops and you have a problem, and then you apply some kind of an arbitration or mediation, and someone determines that the shop didn't do a good job, and the shop refuses to fix your car or give you a refund, three things. Shop's gone, and number one, I will either fix the car for free or I will make the refund. That's all there is to it. So if they charge you $2,500 for a transmission and it doesn't work, and the shop says, tough luck, then I'll fix your transmission up to $5,000, and I'm going to kick the shop off my list. That's happened a couple of times. The list started in the early 90s, and nobody else had a referral list like I did. Obviously, everybody's got one now for plumbers and electricians and all that kind of stuff. But I want to tell you, the first one was in early 90s, and that was me. And because the question I had the most was, is I live in the Central Avenue area near Indian School, and I want to know the name of a good shop. And so today I would say, go to Dave Martin, Martin's Auto. He's a good guy. He's in that area. And if you work in that area, he'll take you to work. So that's kind of how it works out. But I don't monitor these guys every day, and I'm not their daddy. And if they just don't do what they're supposed to do, it's not uncommon to remove them from the list. And believe me, I've done that a couple times. So if you have any questions right now, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, then 888-960-9696, toll free, 888-960-9696. And don't forget, this company is owned by Salem Communications, and my name is Mark Salem, so if you have a complaint, you need to know that. There's no relationship, but it's doggone funny. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we've got two callers, but I got some business to take care of. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue and Indian School has been there since 1967. When you walk in the front, you're going to talk to Ellen, and if you think that you're going to out-techie talk her, you're wrong. You ought to stick with the symptoms and ask for an estimate. Ask what's the diagnostic fee and ask for the estimate when you get there. There's a lot of women in our industry that have been around the block a long time. And one of the things they tell me is we don't really like the hairy-chested guy that comes in and tries to techie talk us. So when you go to Larry Harker's Auto, be nice to Ellen. They've been around since 1967, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And between Bob and Jeremy, you've got two of the finest technicians I know. Bob is part owner with Ellen, and Jeremy is their son-in-law. And I'm telling you, those two guys can diagnose things. So if you live in that area and nobody else can fix it, then perhaps you ought to stop by Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue. Can you tell him I took my eyes off? Jerry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Mark. Looking for a used vehicle. Looking for a Dodge, probably Durango. So the question I have is the 3.6 motor. What's your opinion on the 3.6 motor?
I don't.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And the other one was most of the ones we're coming across are either all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. I don't like it. And it's too many moving parts for me. Kind of simple. And you can't drift them around the corners in the rain.
Well, it depends. So, it depends on the four-wheel drive. If we take it out of four-wheel drive and we put it in two-wheel drive, we're disconnecting the front end. And so going through the rain sideways is certainly possible. All-wheel drive, it's not. But four-wheel drive typically has some kind of a lever that allows you to go to neutral, four-low, high-low, and normal. So, and if you're going to buy something, may I suggest that you have somebody check it out. It's called a used car checkover. It can cost $100, but let me tell you why. Little old lady brought in a Maxima the other day, and she sat in the lobby, and she says, I'm getting ready to buy this. We wrote $1,200 worth of work it needs now. And we documented it with pictures and all that kind of stuff. She came back in and she says, two things. And I thought, okay, one of them is you're an idiot. And she says, no, two things. Number one, they fixed based on your list, and they knocked $500 off to compensate me for the $100 I paid for the used car lot. So this lady make a lot of money, and I would suggest that after you're serious, just take it to the shop that you patronize and say, I want a used car checkover. Otherwise, I want to know what it needs today, in 3 months, and in 6 months to the best of your ability. And that's what I would do if I were you. Okay?
Okay. All right. And the 3.6 motor?
You know, it's not on my radar screen, so I'm going to give it an A or a B. It's just not something that there's so many different motor combinations that I would go, ugh. But your 3.6 isn't. That's a V6, yes? Okay. Well, I like Dodge, and that used purchase of a Durango is not going to bother me a bit. And if there's a problem, they'll find it in the used car checkover, but the 3.6 doesn't bother me. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chris, you're up next.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2016 Ford Focus ST, and I think I might have a couple of issues going on. I don't know if they might be related. When I'm at high speeds between probably say 75 to 80 miles an hour, my car really shakes, not violently, but it's very noticeable such that I want to drop down to low mileage so I can try to mitigate that.
Okay.
And then when I'm at low speeds, when I take my hand off the steering wheel, it kind of moves left and right, but it still is aligned. It doesn't move off the center line, but the steering wheel just moves left and right. So I don't know if those two things are related to them. I might have two different things going on there.
I think, first of all, I'm intrigued by the fact that you have to go 75 to 80. First of all, why don't you tell me where you live and your last name so I can have somebody come and visit you? I'm teasing you, of course. And I'm intrigued by the fact that it goes up that high, and I'm thinking to myself, a tire balance problem would have come on a long time before that. He's not touching the brakes, so it's not a brake problem. So I was kind of sitting there running that through my half cockeyed computer. Then you said to me, I got play in the steering wheel, and if the car doesn't pull left and right, and I go, woo-hoo. So I would have to drive it, but I want you to know that you should not be able to turn the steering wheel left to right at 75 and 80 miles an hour without the car following the direction. But the fact that it goes straight down the road intrigues me, because that means that the alignment's not necessarily off, but we may have a tire that is suffering from the fact that we've got a little play in the front end. And if the tire is suffering, then it has abnormal tread wear, which can cause the vibration you just talked about. The good news is to put this up on the rack, go drive it, and shake down the front end and look at the tires and all that kind of stuff. It's probably going to cost you $50 at most shops. So it's not that big of a deal. So, and tell me where you're driving 75 to 80.
I've gone up in years, so it's only on the highways. So it was just really noticeable when I would take my kids and I, when we drove up to Tucson.
Okay.
And you don't want to be doing 65.
No. Now let me, in the case anybody asks that, then this is the right question. You know, Mark, it's I'm not really driving. I'm asking on behalf of my wife. You know, I used to be a policeman, and I'm really quick at thinking about those things. And so when I asked you that, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if he's going to blame it on his wife. But anyway, have you ever done radio before?
No, I have not. But I've always wanted to do radio ads, getting the voiceover work and whatnot. So if you guys have any openings, I'll be more than happy to read whatever ads you guys have.
All you got to do is read something for 60 seconds and submit it. But you have a good radio voice is what I'm getting at. Gil even said that when he took the call. He goes, next caller is going to be Chris, and he's got a great radio voice. And so when you start talking, I said, I agree. So anyway, if you need a second job, that might be something you want to do. All righty.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good morning.
And same to you. Thank you. Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 in Bellies on the northeast corner. I've known Kurt's for many, many years. I trust him. I send people to him that are outside my geographical area that we cover, and I've never had a chance to have to deal with a mad customer that came from Kurt's. In fact, I get lots of calls that said, I took it into Kurt's like you said, I told him the symptoms and not what my husband said it was, and Kurt fixed it, and to my complete satisfaction. So if you're in that area of Bell and I-17 and you don't have a shop, you always do this. Go in and get an oil change, see how they treat you, because here's what you got to know. Business has been slow for a while, although I get lots of calls and I make some calls, hey, how's business? And all of us have said in the last week to 2 weeks, things are start popping in our industry. But here's the problem. When you go in for an oil change, and every time you go in, they give you a laundry list of things that need to be done, you need to go someplace else. And you need to explain how you drive the car, how far you drive the car, and any of the symptoms. Or you say to them, you say I need four tires. Why? Well, they're wearing funny. Well, what would be a symptom of wearing funny? Well, you've probably got a rumble noise. I don't have a rumble noise. Car doesn't pull left and right. I don't have any steering problems at all. I'll tell you what. Just write it down, put your initials next to it, and put the estimate on there. And you know what? They'll never do that. You're asking them to write it down, sign it, and put their initials next to it and the estimate. They're not going to do that. They're going to come up with some other excuse. So the idea is, what symptom are you going to fix that I have today that necessitates this $1,100 worth of work? That's how it really is supposed to be. So Kurt's Auto Repair is a good place to go. We don't have any other callers?
Nope, lines are open.
Lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's lots of shops in town that are really, really good. I have a transmission shop and a paint and body shop on my list that I've used myself. I know they're good. I use them myself. I would send my mom to them. I would send my dad to them. I would send all of my family to them. And speaking of moms and dads, to all of you mothers out there, I hope you have a happy Mother's Day tomorrow. At my house, we're up here at the Horse property in Payson. I've got great-grandma, and then grandma, and then daughter, and then daughter. So great-grandma is, his last name is Cordley, then my wife is next, Renee, and then next is our Andy, our daughter, and then next is Josie. So there's four generations. The fear I have, and the problem I have is that they're all out garage sailing. I call it junking. And and they took my truck, which means they're planning on buying a lot of crap. Nevertheless, it's Mother's Day, so I'm going to just get past all of that and just say, what the heck. Another thing, I had my barn painted, and I walked through the barn with the painter, and it's one I've used before, and I really like him and stuff. And we walked through the barn, and I said, okay, well, you know, we had talked about these three doors needing to be redone. They're nice wooden doors to cover the bathroom and cover my workshop and cover the bathroom, workshop, oh, and the tack room. And he was going to paint the barn, and we discussed the colors and where we're going to use stain and all that kind of stuff. And so he did it, and it was really a great job. And we had written a check for the amount he had quoted us, and then he called me and said, I need another $800 for the doors. And I said, I thought the doors was included. And he says, no, it wasn't. And I said, well, let me tell you what I remember. And so I regurgitated that we were standing here and we were looking, and I said, I need the door. Now, he had done my front door before, and he took my front door and made it look like, he took my front door that was a minus 20 and made it look like a 50. I mean, it was just a stunning restoration of my door. So I just kind of, I said, okay. And he goes, well, you don't have to pay for it if you don't want to. And I said, well, I need to think about it. So I talked to Renee, my wife, and she said something that was kind of made a lot of sense. She said, the doors really look great. She says, they did a, and they did the water room door, so they really did four doors. And she says, based on what he said, he paid us, we paid $160 to have the, both doors, all four doors, stripped and then restained and revarnished and all that other kind of stuff. And she says, and don't forget he charged us $400 for the front door. And I said, well, the front door was really bad. So anyway, we paid him the $800, but we also said to him, with all due respect, we need to make sure that we always know what you're doing and it's included in the estimate that you've already given us. I'm not telling you that to tell you I'm a hero or anything like that, but the real, the thing that pushed us over the edge was what a nice job they did on the doors compared to, and the cost compared to the front door. So we paid it. It's not because we could afford it. It's just because we paid it, because that's the way it's supposed to be. Got anybody else, Gil?
Yes, we have Charles.
Charles, good morning.
Yeah, morning. I've wondered this for many years, and you know, you, why new car engines don't require a break-in period. Because I remember before, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you had to, you know, accelerate, decelerate, don't drive a steady speed, and you know, and all that seems to have gone away.
And I can answer that for you. Today, our making of the motors is quite different than it was in the old days. And number two, in the old days, we didn't really have, we didn't go fast, and we had substandard oil, and the motors were going to go to heaven, motor heaven, at 80 to 100,000 miles. The only thing I tell people with today is don't drive your car on cruise control for the first thousand or first couple thousand miles. I don't want the motor to sit in one place. I want you to throttle up and back off, throttle up and back off, throttle up and back off. I want you to do that to your motor. That's how we wear it the best. But I can tell you this much. We've done analysis after first oil changes on cars because we think that's a good idea to see if there's anything coming apart inside the new engine. And I want to tell you the amount of metal in the oil
1 minute
after 3, 5, 6, 7, 8,000 miles is so minuscule, which means we're already polished. We're not shedding metal, and we're not having to polish all the cylinders and the pistons and the rings. So I agree with you. That was something a long time ago. But I told my wife when she got her new Edge, did I say she had a Ford?
Yeah.
I made a mistake. It was whatever. I said to her, no cruise control for the first 2,000 or 3,000 miles. I want you to vary the throttle. And see, you hit the throttle, and you kind of rattle the motor, and then you let go of the throttle, and you oil it up. So you rattle it up. Rattle it and then oil it. Rattle it and oil it. With cruise control, you don't really get to do that. So anyway, Charles, thank you for bringing that up. Hopefully that answered your question. And the last question is our oil today is so far superior than the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and even to some degree the 80s. Far superior. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday for 2 hours, 10 to noon, talking about cars, and you're always welcome to join us. But when we have a lady, she goes first. And Vicki, you're the lady that's on the line, and how can I help you?
Mark, you said something in the last hour that just has me scared witless. About the old engines, frequently went to heaven around 80 to 100,000 miles. I've a 69 C10 from the second owner. I've got paperwork going back to the early 90s, something vague about an engine overhaul. And he, in 93, I think, and paperwork where he documented changing the oil every 2,000 miles. And he barely drove it 4,000 miles a year. But how can I keep that engine from going to heaven or hell?
Piece of cake. Let me change your question. Mark, you said that the newer model cars go a long time and the old cars don't. And that's true. And here's the thing. Virtually every motor that's damaged that rolls into my shop was damaged by the nut behind the wheel. So they overheated them because they're on their way home, they're running late, the kids are at the bus stop, or whatever. And they look down and the needle's in the red and they go, well, I only got another mile left. Bad idea. Or they drive along, they got stereo real loud, the engine starts clattering, then it starts knocking, and then it blows up. So those are the two reasons. There's cars in our fleet that are 3,000 and 4,000 and 500,000 mile cars, and I have no reason to believe otherwise. But I will tell you this. I don't like the 2,000-mile oil change because it gives you a false sense of security. You see, people go in and they do oil changes far more often. They're wasting natural resources, and they're not taking the oil into the any area of his life. So what we end up doing is we have this false sense of security that my motor's going to love me because I change the oil every 2 instead of 3. And that's just not true. There is no science that says if you change your oil at half the normal value that your engine's going to love you or last longer or anything. So I'm not a fan of that. But let me explain. Conventional oil has a 3,000 to 5,000 mile interval. It didn't used to, but it's a lot better. So 3,000 to 5,000. Now, if you're in Ahwatukee, like my customers are, and you go 2,000, 3,000 miles a year, I got you. I'm going to put conventional oil in it. I want you to go 3,000 or so. I want you to come in at the beginning of the summer, April. I want you to go through summer, you know, with fresh oil. Now, I have a semi-synthetic blend oil, and that's good from about 5,000 to 7,500. And that oil is a halfway between synthetic and conventional, but again, it's got from 5 to 7,500 mile interval, and that still covers people. I've got a lot of customers, Vicki, on one time a year oil changes. Then I got the new cars with synthetic oil, and if you drive 10 to 15,000 miles a year, one oil change a year. Your car's not going to love you more, and neither is the environment. And believe it or not, you know, Vicki, even though I'm a cowboy, I am a leader in the auto repair industry as far as the environmental is concerned. And let me just blow a little smoke up my own pants. I'm the only auto repair shop that's been honored with our environmental procedures by EPA, the federal government, the state of Arizona, the county we live in, and the city we live in. So we have those kinds of certifications because as far back as 1994, everything that could be recycled at my shop has been recycled to my shop. And the only thing that hasn't is the paper towels and toilet paper in the bathroom. And we bring that to Gil at KKNT, my engineer, and he gets rid of that for us. So I'm glad you're laughing, Vicki.
Still applies to a truck that's 51 years old.
Yes. Yeah, I just don't like the oil change. Vicki, I know you're not. I think you're the same Vicki I'm talking about. Did you go to Black Wheels not too long ago?
Yeah.
Okay. Your truck's in pristine shape. You take really good care of it. It's not hauling a trailer that it shouldn't. It's not hauling a big three-axle boat. And there's just no reason for you to waste the oil and waste the money. I would put you in a conventional, 3 to 5. I'd put you in a semi-synthetic. It just depends on what you drive a year. I would say, I'm going to tailor the oil to what you drive a year, and I want to see you before the summer. That's it. So, Vicki, thank you very much. Ladies always go first. So, you're the first one. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a good guy. He has good staff. He's honorable. He's dependable, and he's been around a long time. So, I-17 and Deer Valley, northwest corner. If you live in that area, you don't have a garage, or maybe you're just slightly upset with your garage, then it would be a good time to go try Action Auto. And if you try them and you like them, then the effort was worth the while. So that's Action Auto Repair. Been around since 1983, I-17 in Deer Valley. Any other callers? Gil? Gil? Oh, he's on right now.
Lines are open.
Oh, lines are open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Let me tell you something about myself because there's no callers. In 1968, I went to work for Ken Vivian at Broadway and Priest in Tempe at the Shell Station. And I was just new in high school. I learned a lot there. I learned so much. And then I kind of morphed into kind of an oil change guy, and I would check the tires for the technicians, and they would show me bad shocks and all that kind of stuff. I graduated from high school in 1972. In 1973, I was hired by the Scottsdale Police Department. I said to them, why did you hire me? Most people think I look like I'm 10 years old. And I don't know. I was, 18 or 19 years old? And they said, well, we like your street sense. So anyway, I was there all the way to 1980. But I've always loved to work on cars. And I had the opportunity in 1980, actually 1979, to run a mobile gas station in Ahwatukee. I was the very first business to open in Ahwatukee. But there may be some difference there. There may have been a Circle, well, there was a Circle K that opened before I am, so it's true I'm the second business in Ahwatukee. And then in 1994, my wife and I built our facility at Warner and I-10 just east of there, and we've been running it ever since. I did something the other day for our bank who helped us through this pandemic process, and my two kids that run the shop, Andy and Alan, between the two of them have something like 81 or 82 years between the two of them of time at our shop. And then our entire staff has been with us for a total of, I don't know, 117 years. So we have some people that have been around a long time. We've had some folks that work for us that are really good at what they do. And as you can imagine, if you've listened to me for very long, I'm kind of a no-nonsense guy. If you're going to come into my shop and start selling everybody and their mother everything that you think they need and to pad your paycheck with their money, that's not going to last very long. There's a lot of shops in our group that really look out for our customers. I got your oil change done. Here's a couple things you need to watch. You need to plan for a set of tires, and those front brakes you're concerned about still will last another two or three oil changes. That's what it's all about. It's how do we treat our mothers? And by the way, to all of you mothers, great-grandmothers, grandmothers, mothers, happy Mother's Day on behalf of me and all the men that don't have their mothers anymore. Who we got next, Gil?
We have Zach.
Zach, good morning. Again, Jack or Zach, I can't hear you.
Zach.
Okay. I think he's breaking up, isn't he? Gil?
I think he's listening to us in delay.
Oh. Hey, Zach, you have, are we in delay? Oh, you know why?
We're in delay. So he's probably listening on the radio.
Uh-huh. And he's waiting for me to
say. Try again.
Zach, pick up your phone and stop. They put delay on there in case I say a bad word. Gil can push a button. The bad word doesn't go over the air, and I don't get called in for a butt chewing.
Well, let's go to John. John's ready.
Okay, John, you're up next, buddy.
Hi, Mark. My name's John. I've got a question, Mark, on these air kits that you use in lieu of having a spare tire. I have an SUV that came without a spare. I think, I don't know, do all SUVs come without spares now?
You know,
the one I have says Continental Car Kit. It's just and I've never opened it up, but it's the kind that you plug one end in, I guess, in your cigarette lighter, and the other end in your tire. And can I count on that thing? Is that reliable? Do those things work? And a related question, in addition to pumping air into the tire, do they have some kind of, like, compound to help seal the leak?
Well, that's a real, everything you said is a problem. First of all, most tires that fail have a hole that you're not going to be able to inflate the tire anyway. You kissed a curb, ran over something big, you had a big nail, whatever. So having somebody stop and air up your tires is probably not going to be something that's going to happen. Number two, you don't ever put sealer in any tire that was built in the last 20 years because there's a transmitter for your tire monitoring system. And it's inside the tire, and it ain't cheap. So if you put lube in there, if you put stop leak in there, you're going to contaminate the antenna and the transmitter that tells the computer what the air pressure is in that tire. The best thing you can do, I'll tell you what to do. This is what I do. I'm not a real fan of the road clubs. As a matter of fact, I'm not a fan of them at all. But what I do is I have towing on my auto insurance. And so it's like a low deductible. I pay the first $50, and they don't have all these rules that say you have to be towed to the closest place, and it just happens to be one of our shops, and that you have to do this, and you have to do that, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you have to prove that the insured person was driving the car, and blah, blah, blah. That's a big waste of my time. So I think I have Farm Bureau that runs the trucks up at the ranch. And I have towing, and I have windshield, and I don't pay a bunch of money. But with towing, it's ollie, oxen free. If I need a tow, and I got a tire that I've cut up and been stupid, call a tow truck, have them ship it over to the shop, fix it, and they pay the bill for the tow. So that's what I do.
All right.
You'd be better off. they make a little canister about the size of a 16-ounce beer can, and it has high-pressure air in it. And I carry that on my motorcycle. They're kind of expensive, but they're no more expensive than a used tire for your truck.
Where would I buy one of those?
Buy it from a welding shop. Just buy it from a welding shop and tell them I want a small canister, and I'm going to put a hose on it with a chuck. I got an air gauge. I'm just going to put that somewhere where it's not going to bother, and you'll be amazed, because when I'm riding my motorcycle, and say, for instance, somebody has a flat and then somebody else has a flat, I can do both of them. I mean, and we're going to plug the tire.
If you do that, doesn't that, then the leak won't go, you're inflate the tire, and then wouldn't the leak just continue to leak, the air goes out?
Yes, you're right. But not
you
too
can
much.
Drive for a while. You can get somewhere.
Yeah.
Listen, a related question.
Okay.
These run flats, I didn't get a run flat because I've been told that the ride, the normal ride when you're driving, is a bit rougher because the side of the tire is thicker. Is there a difference in drivability between, and just regular feel as you're driving, between a regular tire like the one I have? I have a Michelin Defender. Mm-hmm. Are these what they call these run flat tires?
Okay, I would tell you that a huge percentage of customers of mine don't want the run flats because they're so expensive, and a huge amount of customers of mine insist that we put a conventional radial tire back on their car. Now, one time, and it had to do with a real high performance import car, the customer didn't like the ride, and so we just said we'll put a new set of tires on, we'll give you credit, blah, blah, blah. So that's the only time that's ever happened. But the run flats are nice. But I want to tell you something. I got to drive a car around the track over on the west side with run flats. And there was other guys that were driving cars on that track as well. And we were driving the cars like we stole them and that none of us owned them. And heat builds up a tire, and when the tire gets to be 180, 200 degrees, the glue starts coming apart and the tire is going to heaven. Most all of us could get the tires well over that temperature. And so I think it's a great marketing, and it gives people comfort. And if it gives people comfort, that's okay with me. But as far as I'm concerned, it gives me comfort that I have a towing insurance, and I'll just call somebody, take it to the closest garage, put me back together, and I'm on my way. So it's just a matter of how you feel. And so with a motorcycle, I can't carry an air pump and all that kind of stuff, but when I heard about this, I thought, this is a neat. These canisters, honest to goodness, I bet you could fill up 12 passenger car tires with this thing that's slightly bigger than a tall beer can. So, anyways, I got to run. But if Zach comes back, I'll take him. But you were kind of gargled, and we had a quality problem, and it was on our end because Gil, the engineer, caused it. 602-508-0960. We got lines open. Two minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. If you want to argue with me, that's fine. If you want to take issue with something I said, that's fine too. You want to ask a question on behalf of your wife, or you want to ask a question on behalf of your husband, or if you want me to settle an argument, I got all that covered. 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete auto repair. Family owned and operated since 1982, Chuck and his son Derek do a good job. Their technicians are not paid a commission or percent of your repair bill. They're paid hourly and weekly. Therefore, they are not motivated to sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, and you're in Tall Cotton. Okay, let's see. We don't have anybody, do we, Gil? Oh, yes, we do. Gil's answering the phone. See, when Gil doesn't answer me back, it's because he's on the phone. And I can...
Oh, I'm back, Mark.
Oh.
But I wasn't on the phone.
Oh, okay. The auto repair industry, like everybody else, has suffered a lot in the last month or two. But it seems to be coming around for us. Everybody's struggling with the masks and the disinfectants and the sanitizer soap and stuff like that. But I got to tell you just something kind of funny. My daughter, Andy, she's really good at what she does. She is just, and I got two things. I'm going to tell you about what she did with the plastic stuff, but I'm going to tell you first. She is a really good person at the counter, and guys don't like that, and guys won't listen to her, but she asks for symptoms. Sometimes they refuse, and she's fine, or they'll tell her that the guy on the internet said this is what's wrong with their car, and she'll smile. But she's been around the block. She and my son Alan have been with the company for more than 40 years. So they know. And front counter people are the most important, because those are the ones that put you at ease. Those are the ones that will tell you the process. Those are the ones that have to have some mechanical knowledge. So it's a mistake to figure that a woman like Ellen at Larry Harker's Auto doesn't know what she's talking about or doing. There's a good chance they're more highly educated than one person out of 1,000. And that's just kind of the way it is. Nevertheless, we put plastic things up and we put these lines back and we put these separator lines. Nobody has paid attention to that. Nobody. We took the soda, we have a free pop machine. We took the cups away. We took all the lobby chairs out. Now we only have 3 and they're spaced 10 feet apart. All that kind of stuff. Nobody pays attention to it. They'll pull their chairs next to one another and talk. So anyway, I don't know what to tell you, and I don't want to get into politics, but I got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Randy.
Randy, good morning. What's up?
Hey, Mark. Hey, love the show, man. Get all kinds of info from you. Hey, quickly, I got a 04 Toyota Tundra, 4.7 liter in it. The air conditioning system in it, you know, when I'm sitting at idle, you know, not moving the vehicle, idle's down at about 700-800 RPM, nice and smooth, everything runs great, but the AC won't stay cool. About a week or so ago, I had a clutch fan go out, and the clutch fan failed, locked up, and so I was moving more air through the radiator at a stop, and it seemed like the AC was running a little cooler, you know, when I'm not moving. I'm just wondering, is there something, because I seem to recall years ago I had a vehicle, I can't remember if it was a Ford or a Chevy, but at any rate, as I recall, when you turned the AC on, it went to a high idle on the engine.
Okay.
I'm wondering, is there a system like that with the Toyotas that you could install, or is there something that the dealer could look at? Or
no, You know, it's a bad idea to diagnose this, because this could be an airflow across the radiator. The condenser sits in front of the radiator. The condenser could be full of bugs, but full of trash. There's all kinds of problems, because yours is an 04. So you've got all kinds of condenser issues, and you've got to be able to wash the radiator forward and wash the condenser forward. We got to make sure that we got a fan that's going to be pulling air through it, and you can find that out with toilet tissue. The idea is there's two reasons why we have two different levels of cold. And that's airflow or refrigerant level. That's all.
Right.
Period. So in your case, you put the fan clutch on and you said it was better. Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Prior, it was noisy as heck, but prior to replacing the fan for a couple of days, it seemed like it was running a little bit cooler at idle. You know, maybe it's because the fan was locked up.
Absolutely.
The clutch wasn't slipping.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Take it out on the road. This is part of the air conditioning diagnostic process. Take it out on the road. You see what it is at 60, 70, 80, 90. Of course, we don't do the 80, 90 because we're law-abiding citizens. But then you go and you're going to argue with me?
No. I was just saying, yeah, you're right, wink, wink.
Yes. Thank you for that. So, and then we just set the car there, and it just sits there and runs, and we're taking temperatures of the center vent, and it's on maximum, and it's on high speed, or it's on third speed. At the end of the day, then we put a big fan in front of it and see if we can drop the temperature. If we can, and we've got this discrepancy between no movement and 60 miles an hour down the highway, then all we're going to do is we're going to check the fans. We're going to make sure that they're moving air across the radiator, because when you're stopped at a traffic light, you don't have the rush of air that you would at 60 miles an hour. And we're also going to check the refrigerant level. Most all of us have this electronic dipstick that we've never had before. It's like $125 plus whatever Freon you need. Plug it in, suck all your Freon out, and clean it up and weigh it. It's 30
right.
ounces.
Right.
We look at the sticker. It's 35. We put your 30 back in. We add 5. You're out the door. And I want to tell you something. The success rate of that equipment is virtually 99.9%. 99.
Right.
If we give a, if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. Come back and we'll give you your money. Nobody comes back. So
right.
I would look at that. Now that you got it fixed, and if the fan clutch did lock up, then it was moving a lot of air, and at that particular
yep.
point, you would think that you would it would blow cold, but you're talking that there is a difference and was a difference, and so therefore I'm going to default to, I think you need to have the refrigeration checked with the electronic dipstick. That's what I think.
Gotcha.
All righty.
You got any shops down here in the Yuma area you might recommend?
Oh, there was a guy, Dennis something or other, that had kids and had a couple shops, and I loved him like a brother. He was good, but he's passed. And one of them was on the way into town on the 10, or on the 8, I don't remember, and on the 8, and they had two. And there, as you came into town, one was on the left. I'll think of his name, but his first name was Dennis, and him and his kids did a great job. Gotta go. See you in a minute. So it's 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're off the air at 12 o'clock. We've got one line taken. We got four wide open. Gil will answer the phone. He's in a bad mood, so try not to make him worse than he already is. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you about someone called about a tire store on the west side in Surprise that sells everything from wheelbarrow tires to earth-moving tires, and the answer to that is S&S Tire does that. So it's S&S Tire. It's on the northwest. Actually, they have three or four locations up and down the west side of town. So they got one Sun City, one in Surprise, and one down in Avondale. So I know of at least three. So S&S Tire is the one that you were thinking about, and thank you for calling. Let's go to Alex. Alex, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've got a 2001 Ford Escape. Got 146,000 miles, V6. Got a really rough idle when it's cold, but it all smooths out when it warms up.
Okay. When it's cold, the computer's going to add a little bit more fuel, as like the choke would normally do. It's normally going to kick the idle up just a little bit to give you a fast idle. So all that has to happen. Now, don't go out and buy all these parts, please. Bad coolant sensor could cause that. A dirty throttle body, a dirty idle air control motor, a dirty throttle blades, all of that can cause that. So I think what you do is, if I can be so bold as to make a suggestion, is take it to your shop and mm-hmm. say to them, I want you to start it tomorrow morning. I don't want you to touch the throttle. I want you to hit the key. Just start it and feel it. Then I'd like very much for you to go drive it 2 or 3 miles till it warms up and bring it back, and you'll see there's a difference. So I'd like you to call me with an estimate for the repair and tell me what the checkout charge is going to be. That's how you handle it. So you give them the clue, you tell them what to do, and you know what's better yet is write it down and tape it to the rearview mirror. Because you talk to the service writer talks to the shop foreman, the shop foreman talks to the technician. But if you tape your note to the rearview mirror, technician's talking directly to you. So I
Perfect.
Think this is really something that you're going to – the fact that it runs better after it's warm, this is something that's dirty in the throttle body. We got something wrong with the idle circuit, and I think that that's going to be a pretty easy repair. 10-4?
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Thank you
much.
You betcha. When you talk about diesels, first of all, folks, I'm a kid at heart. I still like fast cars. I like air horns. I like big monster diesel trucks. I like speed, I like power, and all that other kind of stuff. Someday I'll grow up, and I don't care when that is. It ain't going to be tomorrow. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shops. He's been dedicated to providing the best service possible and getting the job done the first time right. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is diehard service repair parts. They work on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, Monday through Friday, but they also sell lots of parts on their website 24 hours a day, Strictly Diesel. Who's on the phone?
We have Daniel.
Daniel, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
We are looking to do a project car, a 72 Suburban, and wanting to do an all-new drivetrain, but not really knowing which direction to go to start researching a shop or where we would purchase, like, a crate motor for that.
Okay. That's – what motor do you want to put in it?
To be honest, I don't know. I just want something reliable. We want to put air conditioning and – power steering and everything underneath, you know.
It doesn't have AC. It was born with no AC. Was it born with an automatic or standard?
Automatic.
Okay. And is
but
it got,
all of that would be new.
Okay. You want it new, so you want a restoration, so to speak?
Right. We're powder coating the frame and want to redo the axles, suspension, brakes, and a drivetrain. I just don't know kind of which direction to go to figure out drivetrain-wise what to put in there.
You know...
Or who.
Okay. You know? We're scared of guys like you. That just runs chills up my spine because we're going to do a lot of work that you want to do that we don't want to do. You're going to make changes that we have to adapt to. So if you do changes to the AC system and you make it go from 3.5 pounds to 5.5 pounds, it's going to take us a while to figure that out. And if you put a different transmission in there, you got linkage problems, you got transfer case issues, you got drive shaft issues. There's lots of pitfalls that could really grab and wring out your wallet. So
sure.
I think what you do is you take it to a shop. What part of town are you in?
Mesa. Okay. You recommended Thompson that we take our vehicles to.
Okay. Talk to Brian and say to him, you know, I want to, Brian, what would you do? And Mark Salem would say, I think we need to walk or crawl before we walk and before we trot and before we run. So I want to know what your dream is, and I want to just start at the basics. If you've already got the body off and your powder coat in the frame, that just really, wow. We're really into this thing deep, and here's what I'm going to tell you. If you came to my shop, what's your estimate? What's your budget? What do you think?
To be honest, if we could get away with 25, I'd be happy.
Okay,
but it's also this is something that is something my wife is into, and we want our kids to have fun with. So we're okay if. We have to do it in stages, drivetrain, suspension, brakes.
Okay. I like your number because I figured you were going to be in the 8 to 10 range, and I would say to you, like I said, everybody else is whatever budget you got times 3. Because it has nothing to do with me. I got your dashboard apart and the condenser's leaking like a sieve and the entire evaporator case is bad. And I didn't know that, and I don't have it in my bid. And so you need to know that. So
yeah,
I can see.
The good part is that we want to have it all built from scratch, so I don't have to worry about linkage because you're going to tell me what do we need to put under here with the Danas to make it right, make it whole from the jump. You know, not this is what I want to Frankenstein together.
Okay, and we don't want, and I'm talking we, me. I don't want to be involved in any redesign of the vehicle. If you want to put, I mean, if I were you, I'd put a 350 motor in there and not necessarily crate. I might have yours rebuilt. I'd put fuel injection on it. I'd put HEI. What year is it, by the way?
72.
Okay. I'd put HEI ignition in it. Maybe put some headers, but they leak and nobody's going to be able to guarantee they're not going to leak forever. And so, a 350 HEI ignition. Put fuel injection on it, make the transmission kind of beef it up a little bit, forget the transfer case, it's going to be fine. The differentials, depending on what gear ratios they are, leave it alone. If it's a 373, 342, I'd leave it. If it's a 411, I'd probably go to a higher gear so I get better fuel economy. Update the air conditioning to 134. Put a nice exhaust system on it so it's got a little thunder. Tint the windows. Put a nice sound system in it. Maybe put a tilt column on it if it doesn't already have it. Those are the kinds of things I want you to think about. But in your particular $25,000, I'm going to say let's add another $15,000 to that. And it's not because me, I'm going to bid and give you estimates all the way down the line. It's because of you and your wife and your kids, because things will change and you'll say, well, I want a headliner and I want all the upholstery done and I want tar mats. I want a whole new carpet set up, but I want tar mats underneath them because I don't want any heat coming through the floor. And I want to have the entire bottom of the underside of the body, I want to have it undercoated. So when you start going crazy, but I'm with you. I'm going to tell you that I'm fixing up lots of cars that I hope my grandkids will appreciate. And I hope that they will understand that Papa wanted them to have drive cars that Papa got to drive and in the 60s and the 70s that have a little bit more romping, stomping power than the little three cylinders that we're going to have in the next 10 years. So that's all about me. But I got to run. If you want to continue this, Mark at MarkSalem.com, 602-508-0960. Daniel, you stay right there. So it's 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I know Daniel's on the phone, and I'm going to get to Gary and John real quick. But, Daniel, I've been thinking about this on the break, and what I'd like you to do is go to Salem Boys in Tempe and tell them that Mark said that you'd walk me through the shop. We do lots of this kind of work, and let me just tell you, I got a Camaro in there right now that has just gone twice and three times what we started with. And this is what happened. We ended up with, well, I want LED headlights. Whoa! I want LED taillights. I want running lights. I want a new set of lights across the top of the front of the roof. I want to put the CB radio up on the roof. I want to do this. I want to do that. And it's kind of like, okay, we're going to bid one thing at a time. What do you want next? Okay, this is our estimate. And when we're done, you come in and look at it, and then we move on. I've got a Galaxy in there right now that we've done everything to. I mean everything. We got the motor ready to stuff, but it's going to be a big bill. Tires, wheels, suspension, brakes, disc brakes, different master cylinder, different ignition system, just about everything. There's a lot of us that can do that. If Tempe's not possible, then send me an email, mark at marksalem.com, and I'll guide you the best I can. Gary, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Well, this is a strange little problem. I've got a 2004 Toyota 4Runner. And I'm terribly financially challenged. The one that bothers me the most is the volume knob on the radio. It's not totally disconnected, but there isn't a positive connection anymore. So if you spin it, it jumps around in the volume from too high to too low. And I went on the internet and I said, well, there's corrosion in the copper points in there. Shut it off and you twist it back and forth and it'll clean them off, and I thought that was working, but it doesn't.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. Is the knob firmly attached to the shaft on the radio?
It seems to be.
Okay, all right. There's a place in Tempe that I love. I've done business with them ever since I was in high school in the 70s, and it's called Sounds Good to Me. Good to Me. They're on Broadway, and they're really good at what they do. I want to tell you that it's entirely possible that putting another radio in is going to be cheaper than anything else. So the question is what do you got? No, it's not going to be that bad. I can't bid it, of course. But, I mean, if you have an AM-FM cassette, the question is, you want the cassette? No, I never use it. Fine. How about an AM-FM? Fine. Okay, plug and play. We're done. You want a clock on it? You want this? You want that? Do you want a USB port? All those kinds of questions. But you've got a car that's an 04, so it's 16 years old.
I'm on the road. I'm losing you, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, we can continue the call.
It's got a disc cassette.
Okay. Okay, and you're right. I'm losing you too.
Spinning the thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's just go get an expert to look at it and see what your options are, because that's what you're asking me, and I really can't tell you because I'm not an entertainment guy. But I would think that let's go talk to some people and let's see what our options are. Maybe it can be fixed. So I don't know. But anyway, good luck to you, Gary. John, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. Got a 19 Ram with a 5.7 liter V8. And I was wondering, is there any way I can get the AC to blow colder. It doesn't seem to blow that cold even when it's all the way to the low position, and even compared to other cars that I've had.
Okay. Yeah, there's, you know, there's sometimes that we run hot water through the heater core, and the heater core is adjacent to the evaporator, and the evaporator's job is to get cold, and the heater core is job is to get hot. So there's a little problem there. Sometimes what we do is we put a pair of rubber vice grips on one of the heater hoses and say, go drive it. If you come back and say, oh, it's an obvious difference, then we just put a shutoff valve on one of the heater hose lines and we don't run coolant through the heater. Now, normally the ducting will take care of that. So when you want cold air, the duct shuts off the heater core. And when you want hot air, then we shut off the evaporator. So there's lots of things. Now, we know that recirculation is we're going to recirculate the air within the cab of the truck. So here's how it works. We suck the air off the passenger side floor. We cool it and put it back in the truck. So it's a circle. Outside air, which is normal, is like a swamp cooler. You got to have the windows down. So you got to have each window down an inch. So what we're going to do is we're going to take air from outside in front of the windshield. We're going to cool it off and blow it into the cab. Well, when we blow it into the cab, if the windows are rolled up, then we're blowing into a pop bottle. So you have to understand all the dynamics. And another thing is, drive it for a while, pop the hood, and grab the line, the metal line that goes into the firewall on the passenger side of the engine. There'll be two. One will be hot, one will be cold. I'm interested in the cold. It's bigger than the hot. And let's see what, if you say, Mark, it's frosty, it's good, it's cold, but I still don't have it. I want you to stop by the auto parts store, and I want you to get one of those thermometers that looks like an ice pick with a little round head on it. I want you to stick it in the center vent. I want you to try it both in maximum and in normal. Now, maximum is air conditioning at your house, and normal is a swamp cooler. Just remember it that way. And I want you to go drive it. We get some cars that will blow ice cubes. I mean, we got some cars that will blow low 40s. But depending on the volume of the vehicle, like Suburbans, if you get 55, you're just lucky. That's all there is to it. I mean, we've got a little, you know, one-ton unit trying to cool off a gymnasium when you have a Suburban. And so it's, but right. Is your Ram a pickup truck, and has it got a big mega cab?
It's the crew cab, yeah.
Okay.
The pickup, yeah.
But what I've given you, try some vice grips, but don't pinch the line and tear them up. What we use is needle-nose vice grips, and we put some 3/8 fuel line over both of them. So when we pinch the line, we're not damaging the line. And then let's really find out what the air temperature is when you drive down the highway.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Oh, you're more than welcome, John. Anyway, it's a lot of fun to work with guys that want to recreate the car that they first kissed a girl in. And those of us that are older, we do that. It's nice to think that we're going to pass it on to our grandkids. And really, for me, that's kind of important. It's also nice to have a car that nobody else has. And maybe you've got a sleeper of a car where it looks really stock and it's a 68 Ford Fairlane, but nobody really knows that you have a jet motor underneath the hood and that you could burn the tires from here to Casa Grande on I-10 and all that other kind of stuff. So we're not going to get that on the newer model cars, but the newer model cars are, in fact, pretty good. The fuel injection is much more efficient than any carburetor we've ever seen. The air conditioning is much more efficient than any other air conditioning. The cooling system is more efficient. The steering, the rack and pinions, the gears, the transmission that can be an 8-speed that electronically shifts by itself, or you can manually take control of that. When you look at all of that, realistically, we're better than we were before. The difference is this. In the old days, we're talking about mid-1980s, backwards, if you wrapped your lips around one of the tailpipes of those cars, you'd be dead in 5 minutes because they were dirty and they shoved a lot of bad stuff into the air. The newer model cars, you can lock yourself in your garage and you'll die of hunger before you die of carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, obviously, I'm exaggerating, but the difference is that clear. The air conditionings of today are head and shoulders above the air conditionings in the 70s and the 80s and even to the 90s. The ride of cars today, and when I say cars today, I'm talking about 2010 and north. Cars today, the ride is far superior than we ever had before. The transmissions, the engines, the air conditioning, the cooling systems, the way the windows roll up and down, the entertainment systems, all that kind of stuff. It's just a whole lot better. So we are making progress, and some people don't like the progress, and I understand that too, but that's just the way it is. Our cars are a whole lot better, and I've got a diesel one-ton truck, and I'm not well known for not throttling it up, climbing a hill so that I can maintain the speed and all that other kind of stuff. And I can consecutively, what I'm hauling horses, what I'm hauling tractors, I can get 15 miles a gallon on that. But I can also get 11 by being stupid. So it's, I mean, we never had a one-ton back in the 70s that would get 15 miles to the gallon unless it was going downhill and it was being pushed by a Ford. I'll get a lot of calls on that one. I don't care. So there is a big difference. There's just differences all the way around. We have coolant now that'll go easy 100,000 miles. We got spark plugs that'll do 150, although I don't recommend it. I think if you've got fancy spark plugs, we change them at 100, you'll be better off. We've got all kinds of... We know the carburetor was a third of the work that we did, and today we don't have any carburetors. So that's a good thing. We've got tires that are... I'm exaggerating, 1,000 times better than the bias plies we used to have. We've got cars that won't shake or shimmy that'll do 100 miles an hour. Some of you out there know that you can go well past 100 miles an hour, which is stupid, but I'm just using that as an example because I've never done that. So when you look at the windshield wipers and the glass, and when you look at the creature comforts where we're blowing cold air up your back end now and hot air up your back end now, my wife says, I have enough hot air to heat the car, but she doesn't know what she's talking about. She drinks too much. So the idea is there is a big difference. I have an 81 Suburban.
2 minutes.
It's four-wheel drive, and it's five-speed, and it's factory. It has a winch in the front, and it has a winch in the back. It has a 5.7 fuel-injected motor. It has three fuel tanks. It has brand new tires. We just converted the air conditioning. It has air conditioning to the 134. It has a rack on the top for hunters. This is the ultimate hunting vehicle. It has a 5-speed. Has anybody ever seen a 5-speed in a Suburban? So it's got low range and high range, and it has electric fuel pumps in two tanks that we can fill the main tank with, and it's all kinds of fancy stuff. And it was built by a couple of old machine shop guys that were mentors to me, and certainly were, I think we respected one another. And so I've got that Suburban for sale. It's the ultimate hunting wagon. It starts at $8,000. It's really, really nice. So mark at marksalem.com if you want to look at it. But again, I think it's got a 10,000-pound winch in the front, an 8,000-pound winch in the back, brand-new tires, brand-new brakes, brand-new blah, 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 blah. And the whole idea is that for the family, we've gone through this completely. And if you – I drove it back from Payson. So everything on it is really, really nice. Although it's an 81. I think it's an 81. But it's in the 80s. So that said, if you're a hunter and you're looking forward for hunting season, I have the ultimate hunting wagon. And I can tell you right now, this baby ain't going to get 15 miles to the gallon. But Jim Schaffner from Arizona Speed Marine is the one that installed the 5.7-liter port fuel-injected engine and hooked it all up. And there was nobody better than Jim to do that. And Jim used to own Arizona Speed Marine, and he put big fuel-injected motors in boats that had carbureted 454s in them. So he was well-versed in that. And this car has all the things that everybody recognizes. So mark at marksalem.com. God bless you. And if somebody does something nice for you, stick your arm out and wave thanks.